8th grade history, United States history, March 30th through April 3rd. Thursday, April 2nd. History unit, unity and sectionalism in the United States after the War of 1812. Lesson 4, arguments for and against the Missouri Compromise. Unit overview. Objective, be able to do this by the end of the lesson. Explain the Missouri Compromise through the eyes of slaveholders, Calhoun and John Quincy Adams. Introduction to Lesson 4. Having read through John Quincy Adams' diary entries yesterday, now we will pinpoint a few particular sections and do some textual analysis questions. Feel free to flip back in your packet to pages to reread particular sections. I will be citing sections in the questions themselves. Afterwards, we will read through the Monroe Doctrine and answer a few questions regarding this doctrine. Plan of action. A. Textual analysis questions on primary source John Adams diary entries. B. Corrections using the key on pages 21 through 23 in Use a Red Pen. A. Textual analysis questions on primary source John Adams diary entries. Number 1. According to John Quincy Adams, the cabinet and president met to discuss two questions. 1. Whether Congress had a constitutional right to prohibit slavery in a territory, and 2. Whether the 8th section of the Missouri Bill, which interdicts or prohibits slavery forever in the territory north of 36.5 latitude, was applicable only to the territorial state or could extend to it after it should become a state. Section B. Restate the first question into your own words. Question 1. Question 2. If a territory that is north of the 36-30 line becomes a state, can the state legislature vote to become a slave state? Page 16. Number 2. Adams and the other members of the cabinet agree that Congress, through Article 4, does have the power to prohibit slavery in the territories. However, they, the slaveholders, insisted upon it that the clause in the Constitution, which gives Congress power to dispose of and make all needful rules and regulations respecting the territory and other property of the United States, had reference to it only as land, and conferred no authority to make rules binding upon its inhabitants. And Wirt added the notable Virginian objection that Congress could make only needful rules and regulations, and that a prohibition of slavery was not needful. Section C. What did the slaveholders argue as an answer to question number 1 of the meeting? Number 3. Using Section D, why does John Quincy Adams argue that Congress does have the power to prohibit slavery? Why does he use the preamble as part of his argument? Quote, I had no doubt of the right of Congress to interdict or prohibit slavery in the territories, and urged that the power contained in the term dispose of included the authority to do everything that could be done with it as mere property, and that the additional words authorizing needful rules and regulations respecting it must have reference to persons connected or inhabitants with it, or could have no meaning at all. As to the force of the term needful, I observed it was relative and must always be supposed to have reference to some end. Needful to what end? Needful in the Constitution of the United States to any of the ends for which that compact was formed. Those ends are declared in its preamble, to establish justice, for example. What can be more needful for the establishment of justice than the interdiction or prohibition of slavery where it does not exist? Number 4. Using Section G, would John Quincy Adams support the state legislature's ability to vote to become a slave state? I said that whatever a state legislature might do in point of fact, they could not, by any rightful exercise of power, establish slavery. The Declaration of Independence not only asserts the natural equality of all men and their inalienable right to liberty, but that the only just powers of government are derived from the consent of the governed. A power for one part of the people to make slaves of the other can never be derived from consent, and is, therefore, not a just power. Page 17. Number 5. Using section H, what is Calhoun's perception of the Adams argument? After this meeting, I walked home with Secretary of War Calhoun, who said that the principles which I had avowed were just and noble, but that in the southern country, whenever they were mentioned, they were always understood as applying only to white men. Domestic labor was confined to the blacks, and such was the prejudice that if he, who was the most popular man in his district, were to keep a white servant in his house, his character and reputation would be irretrievably ruined. That's all Section H. Number 6. Using Section J, what effects or evils does slavery have on moral principles and on a person's reason? I told Calhoun I could not see things in the same light. It is, in truth, all perverted sentiment mistaking labor for slavery and dominion for freedom. The discussion of this Missouri question has betrayed the secret of their souls. In the abstract, they admit that slavery is an evil. They disclaim all participation in the introduction of it, and cast it all upon the shoulders of our old Graham, Britain. But when probed to the quick upon it, they show at the bottom of their souls pride and vainglory in their condition of masterdom. It is among the evils of slavery that it taints the very sources of moral principle. It establishes false estimates of virtue and vice. For what can be more false and heartless than this doctrine, which makes the first and holiest rights of humanity to depend upon the color of the skin? It perverts human reason. That's all Section J. Number 7. Using Section J again, how does slavery affect representation in Congress? Why is this effect important? By admitting that slaves are at once enemies to be kept in subjection, property to be secured or restored to their owners, and persons not to be represented themselves, but for whom their masters are privileged with nearly a double share of representation, the consequence has been that this slave representation has governed the Union. Page 18. Number 8. Using Section J, why does Adams favor the Missouri Compromise? What does he think might have been a wiser choice? I have favored this Missouri Compromise, believing it to be all that could be effected under the present Constitution, and from extreme unwillingness to put the Union at hazard. But perhaps it would have been a wiser as well as a bolder course to have persisted in the restriction upon Missouri, till it should have terminated in a convention of the states to revise and amend the Constitution. Number 9. Ultimately, Adams ends his diary entry with the following reflection. If the Union must be dissolved, slavery is precisely the question upon which it ought to break. For the present, however, this contest is laid asleep. What is Adams' concern about the future of the United States? What is Adams foreshadowing? Use answer key on pages 21 to 23 for corrections. This concludes Thursday, April 22nd.